The host has arrived. Your host is exiting the conference. The host has rejoined the conference.
Hi, this is Erin Harden with the Department of Education and Early Development. Chair Fields, are you on the line? Are there any other board members on the line?
They just unmuted me, I think. So.
Wonderful. Thank you, Chair Fields. We'll let you take it from here. I know we're about still 2 minutes from 3:30. We just want to make sure you were with us.
Okay, great.
Hi, this is Erin Harden with the Department of Education and Early Development again. Chair Fields, I know you're with us. We are waiting for a few more board members to join the call. We understand there's a wait in the queue, and so maybe in another minute or two, you could do a quick roll call before we officially start to see if we have board members with us.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Hi, James. This is Erin Harden with the Department of Education and Early Development. Do you want to go ahead and do a quick informal roll call to see if we have our board members online? I understand their line should be unmuted at this time.
Okay, sure. Go ahead.
Member Griffin? First Vice Chair Hamilton?
Present.
Member Kowalski?
Here.
Member Scott?
Here.
Member Stockhausen?
Here.
Second Vice Chair Van Diest?
Present.
Colonel Van Meter?
Here.
Member Loring?
I'm here.
Member Maynard? And Chair Field.
Yep, I'm here. Okay, it sounds like we're ready to go, so I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order at 3:35. And go ahead and do the formal roll call, please.
Formal roll call commencing at 3:35 p.m. Member Griffin. First Vice Chair Hamilton.
Here.
Member Kowalski.
Here.
Member Scott.
Here.
Member Stockhausen.
Here.
Second Vice Chair Van Diest.
Present.
Colonel Van Meter.
Here.
Member Loring.
Here.
Member Maynard. And Chair Field.
Here.
And Mr. Chair, you have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. Okay, wherever you may be, if you could stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag.
The United States of America,
and to the Republic for which it stands,
one nation,
under God,
indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. Next on our agenda, we need a motion to adopt the agenda.
This is Member Van Diest. I move to adopt the agenda of February 14th, 2019.
Member Hamilton, second.
Okay, it's moved and seconded. Discussion? Hearing no discussion, roll call, please.
Member Griffin. First Vice Chair Hamilton?
Yes.
Member Kowalski? Member Scott?
Yes, sorry. Had you on mute.
Member Scott?
Yes.
Member Stockhausen?
Yes.
Second Vice Chair Van Diest?
Yes.
Colonel Van Meter?
Yes.
Member Loring?
Yes.
Member Maynard? Chair Field?
Yes. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote? Hearing no changes?
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Okay, thank you. Next on is the disclosure of any potential conflicts of interest of any board members, any conflicts of interest on anything on the agenda. Okay, hearing no potential conflicts of interest, we'll go into the public comment time. And for individuals, it's 3 minutes, and for organizations, it's five. So please go ahead and, if you're on, if you can try to keep it as close as you can to that would be great so we can move through public comments. So let's see, who is up first?
First up, we have Mr. Tim Bauer.
Okay, Tim Bauer, are you with us?
I am. Thank you very much for hearing me. My name is Tim Bauer. I'm the superintendent of Annette Island School District, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to call in and talk about how crippling the proposed budget is from Governor Dunleavy revealed. I want to take a minute to just focus on the conflict that I'm facing with this. We are very much encouraged and have been for the past couple of years to take the education challenge that Commissioner Johnson has been so strongly encouraging school districts to adopt. My district, like so many others, has adopted it, and we have taken it on, and we are seeing tremendous growth with the investment in early education to get kids reading by end of grade level, by third grade. And we've just, we have taken on a challenge with the proposed budget. It is in direct conflict with the challenge, which we are supposed to be so focused on, but line by item with a measure of goals to support all students to read at grade level, cutting early education seriously, it just puts a roadblock on that. Increased career CTE and cultural relevant education with the budget cuts, we cannot focus on that because we just don't have enough money to focus on that. Close the achievement gap by ensuring equitable education, rigor, and resources. Well, if our resources are being cut, there's no possible way it's going to be equitable. And then there's been a focus for years to prepare, attract, and retain effective educational professionals. That is not even on the map with these proposed budget cuts. And improve the safety of well-being, there's just not funding to improve any safety measures of the building. So I just want to, you're going to hear a lot of things, how it impacts communities, and it's going to devastate communities and educations. But I just want to point out how contradictory it is to be focusing on goals and then have the governor propose taking away virtually all the funding to even remotely come close to accomplishing those goals. It's just very disturbing that we've invested a lot of time and resources and money, and we're seeing growth, and now we're faced with looking at all that for naught and restructuring how we have to function in our district. So thank you for the time. I just would I think it's important to address the mixed messages that we're receiving from our government. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Tim. Next up.
Next, we have Mr. David Neese.
Okay, go ahead, David. You with us?
Hey, this is David Neese in Anchorage. I'm representing myself. I would like you to support Governor Dunleavy's education cuts, simply because when I was on the Education Task Force, one of the things that we said is you can accomplish the mission we had with the funds we were receiving. It's the allocation of the resources, the state money, because, as you know, it is a block grant funding. It goes out there, and the district can spend the money on what they wish. So I think the argument Mr. Dunleavy has presented that this will make districts look at where they are spending their monies is a valid argument. The state board eliminated the requirement that school districts report to them where they're spending their money a couple of years ago, so I don't know how it will be easy to track this, but we definitely felt on the Sustainable Education Task Force that you can do the mission with the money that's involved, and we think that education is paramount in the state of Alaska, and as much money that can get into the classroom as possible would be good. The charter schools limiting administrative costs to 4% has resulted in a surplus of funds in the Anchorage School District for those charter schools. So something along that line legislatively might be a good idea. But I think you have to give the governor a chance to see if, as Brad Keithley put it succinctly, if the lack of money is a motivating fact.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, David. Next up.
Next, we have Tim Parker.
Okay, go ahead, Tim.
Hey, thank you. Can you hear me, Chair Fields?
Yes.
Thanks. I appreciate the chance to testify. My name is Tim Parker, and I'm the president of NEA Alaska. All of you know that I would love to talk about student learning, and I really would prefer to be talking about Alaska's education challenge, as Tim Bauer said, and how as a collective of education professionals, we are working to reduce trauma and ACEs and improve the lessons being taught in schools and use better data assessment systems that lead to improved outcomes for students. But the elephant in the room is the proposed cuts of nearly 25% to K-12. As I listened to our governor talk about his priorities for the state, public safety was front and center. my belief that the work we have started with Alaska's Education Challenge is fundamental to improving public safety by eliminating the primary causes of crime, poverty, and substance abuse. We cannot improve public safety without improving public education. And I would be remiss if I didn't share with all of you the distress that educators across the state are feeling at this moment. They know exactly what a cut of this magnitude would do to the students that they work with right now. They know the names and faces, and those are the kids who would be in a much larger classroom next year, if there even is a classroom. Cuts of this magnitude would have to lead to school closures and so many other horrific outcomes. But I think it's too early to go too far down that path. The cuts were proposed yesterday, and the ink really isn't even dry. I think it's reasonable for you to postpone your decision on this budget proposal for at least a little while, because I don't think that it's entirely possible for you or the general public to understand what's in it. I went back and looked at the budget proposal from 2 years ago. That budget was released in December and voted on by this board at the end of January. I remember it because it had that pencil chart. I looked in this proposal, and I don't see the pencil chart. If the cut really is 25%, that would drop the BSA to $4,500 per student. Maybe that's the number. Maybe it's not. I can't tell. And maybe you guys can, but I can't. I don't envy your positions. I know that as individuals, you share my strong desire to make sure that all 130,000 students in Alaska from the ages of 5 to 18 get the very best possible education. And you know that cutting their support is not going to lead to improved student learning. Seeing all the red lines in the budget document is not your idea of how to improve outcomes. All these cuts raise lots and lots of technical and legal questions that do need answers. As the policy heads within the area of public education, you are entrusted by the people of Alaska and the children to oversee this process. If you need to take time to review and call a special meeting in the weeks ahead, that would seem to be very reasonable. Now, I am an optimist by nature, and I know exactly what I hope for each of our students. And I'm keeping my eye on that and praying that others will join me in that hope. As a state, we can't tie our children's future and their learning to the price of a barrel of oil. We have an obligation and a promise to our students to create a learning environment that maximizes their opportunity. And I know we can get there. Thank you, Chair Fields.
Thank you, Tim. Okay, next up.
Next up is Judy Elledge.
Hey, Judy,
thank
you
very much. Yes, I am. Thank you very much. I'm calling today. For those that do not know me, I have I'm a retired educator who is still working. I've worked in both rural and urban Alaska since 1981, and I'm calling in support of the governor's budget. And my reasonings are, and I know it's painful. It's always painful, but it is time to get our house in order. The people of Alaska overwhelmingly voted for this governor, and he did not hide his agenda on what he planned to do, and that was to balance the budget. When your budget is one of the two highest budgets in the state of Alaska, you have to know that there is going to be a cut, and I do not believe that 20% is going to do some of the things that I hear are going to happen. Is there anyone here that could not cut 20% in their own personal budget? My husband's in the private industry, and I assure you that businesses in this economy have cut their budgets 20% and more in the last 2 years in order to survive because of the lack of revenue. So we currently spend more than any other state in the nation, and yet it has not gotten us the results that all of us wish that it would. I personally don't believe that more money equals better results. I never have. I just think that I'm excited because I think what this budget will do is help all of us have some much needed conversations that maybe we wouldn't have if we were flush with funds. So those are my reasons for supporting this budget, and I ask you to support the governor that was elected on doing exactly what he is doing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Judy. Next up.
Next is Dr. Mary Wagner.
Hey, Mary, are you with us?
Yes. Hello, Chair Fields and members of the State Board of Education and Early Development. My name is Dr. Mary Wagner, and I am the superintendent in the Sitka School District. I am commenting today on your agenda item of approving the FY20 operating and capital budgets. to say that I am deeply concerned over the lack of financial support for public education in Alaska, as presented by Governor Dunleavy, is an understatement. I hope to make a few points about the impact that the governor's proposed operating budget would have on the Sitka School District. In the foundation formula, basic need identifies what is needed to adequately operate a public school district in Alaska. And basic need was established through a comprehensive study in 2001. The governor's proposed budget effectively reduces the BSA in 2020 from $5,930 to $4,572. A functional BSA of $4,572 takes us slightly below what the state of Alaska thought was an adequate education back in 2005. And the BSA was $4,576 at that time. Between 2005 and 2020, the cost of living increase in Alaska has been 22.8%. According to the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development, a 2005 BSA of $4,576 is equivalent to $5,614 in the Consumer Price Index for Anchorage in 2018, which is the most recent data. In Sitka, our district cost factor is 1.195, which would bring the $5,614 Anchorage equivalent for Sitka to $6,709 for this year, FY19. A BSA of $5,930 does not keep up with the cost of inflation. The governor's budget leaves school districts with a functional BSA that is nearly equivalent to what was considered basic need in 2005. How many people could live on their income if it were cut by 25% and in 2020 they were asked to live on their 2005 income level? I wonder what data was used to say that a 25% cut to public education will still provide for educational adequacy. For our students' sake, we need to look to the future and not the past. I urge the Board of Education and Early Development to strongly reject the governor's current proposed budget for public education. Thank you for listening to my comments.
Thank you, Mary. Okay, next. Who's up next? Department, are you on?
I wonder if I'm still active or live.
Oh, you may be. So you may have to hang up, or I don't know what you got to do, or I don't know what on your end you have to do. And I don't know how to, they should be able to control it anyway. I'll text them and see.
You can still hear me, though, right? No.
I can hear you.
Is the department on?
I'm getting... No, they, I guess they cut. They can hear us, but they're muted. So hopefully they can get back on. Okay, so they're going to go ahead and fix it, but while they're doing it, I think Miss Sheeb, are you on?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, go ahead.
My name is Diane K. Scheib, and I am with the MATSU Education Association, and I've been a teacher since 1993. I was surprised to hear that you've been requested to approve the operating and capital budgets for BEAD today. This appears to be an unreasonable and irresponsible request. Alaska citizens have not even had 48 hours since the budget bomb was dropped by the governor. It's reasonable and responsible to take time to analyze the effects of the budget proposal, and it is only a proposal at this time. So what is the hurry to have DEED approve their budget so quickly? What purpose can it serve? And in what way will an immediate decision help the students of Alaska? How will this quick decision attract more educators to our state to serve our students? At the very least, DEED needs to afford the public access to their reasoning for this rash decision. And because we're a democracy, the public should be allowed to respond. I would ask that you postpone this decision and allow the public process to take its course. The students of Alaska deserve no less. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Diane. Next up.
Next up is Kai Binkley-Sims.
Okay, Kai, you with us?
Hi there. My name is Kai Binkley-Sims. I'm an Eagle River resident and mother of three kids in three different schools in the Eagle River area. Thanks for the opportunity to testify, and I will be very brief. I would like to voice my opposition to the magnitude of the proposed reduction in foundation formula funding to K-12 education. The Constitution requires that the state maintains a system of free public education for all children. This reduction in funding would severely hamstring public schools who have no other major revenue sources available. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, Guy. Next up.
Sean Arnold.
Okay, Sean, you with us? Sean? Maybe we try to go back to him if he got disconnected or something. Who's up after him?
Next up, we have Martin Smith, Chris Carmichael, Jasmine Laval, and Vicki Spencer as a group.
Okay. Go ahead, group.
Hey, thank you very much for hearing us. This is Chris Carmichael. I'm joined by the aforementioned individuals. Two are deans. Jazz is the principal of the Michelmoot Elit Narviat School. I'm the principal of Gladys Jung Elementary, all in Bethel. And we've got some grave concerns about the budget as has been presented by the governor. I think that we all probably echo the sentiments of the Superintendent Bauer, who spoke first. And we've got a couple of other points that we'd like to highlight. One is that the Association of Alaska School Principals just released or recently released their ACSA joint position statement, and the values that are represented in this budget run contrary to the voice of the administrators statewide. We would very much like to see a funding formula for education not based upon oil and that is commensurate with the needs of a technological educational experience that our kids go through now. When people think about what it cost for basic allocation per student, especially in rural Alaska, the dependency that we have on technology is so severe that the costs are so elevated, comparatively speaking, to where they would be otherwise in the country, that folks need to factor that into what it costs to run business out here. Secondly, we are certain to experience massive legal costs as this budget winds up being reviewed in the courts. The state's been prosecuted before and at least one time successfully for failing to adequately fund education, and I can see this looming on the immediate horizon if we adopt this. And thirdly, there's a university component to this. It's our goal as elementary and high school principals and deans to lead kids to be able to be ready to enter the university system, but if we're cutting 41% of their actuarial budgets, then we're not sure that there's going to be a place for them to migrate into. And so we could wind up losing motivation on the elementary and high school side as the university section of our business winds up having severe fiscal issues. We could lose talent because of that in state. So that's my take on this, and I'll turn it over to my other colleagues who may have additional comments.
Being a K-2 principal in Bethel, Alaska, I can tell you I have increasing student numbers, increasing student needs, increasing mandates that I have to cover, and I can't imagine doing it with less people. And we would get less people if we get less funding. That's our primary concern. We want to be able to safely supervise students and meet their educational and social emotional needs. It's very hard right now. Many of us work a lot of extra hours as it is. I can't see doing it with any less at my level.
This is Martin Smith. I just have to echo the statement by my colleagues, my supervisors here. Our numbers since the October count have increased by 25 students, and we're only a couple months into that. Our numbers look to continue to increase as Bethel increases in size with the installation of more employment at the hospital as the community grows. There's no way that we're going to be able to function with 25% less than what we've got right now. It's not feasible.
And this is Vicki Sinclair. My comment, I guess, would echo that of the lady from Matsu to postpone the decision. Let it become more spoken about in public, get out to more people so that a better decision can be made. Be thorough, give it some time, and think about what the fallout can be from the decision. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for hearing us. We appreciate you.
Okay, thank you. Should we try to go back to Sean Arnold? Sean, did you make it back?
Yeah, hi, Chairman Fields. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you. So to Chairman Fields and members of the Board of Education, thank you for the opportunity to allow me to speak up today in the opposition to the impact of the potential budget cuts. For the record, I'm Sean Arnold, Superintendent for Valdez City Schools. There is no more important responsibility of state government than to provide support for public schools. Education funding represents a significant portion of the state general fund budget with good reason. A good system of public education is an absolute necessity if the state's economy is to grow. Alaska is in competition not only against the lower 48, but also China, India, and Europe, to create jobs and build wealth. An educated workforce is critical to the jobs of the future. First step in the process is a high-quality public education system. Make no mistake, our schools will be nothing short of gutted and fully decimated if something does not change with regards to the proposed allocation. It is difficult, if not impossible, to overstate the negative short and long-term impact of these projected cuts. And while we seek not to alarm or provoke anxieties, it is incumbent for educators to adequately communicate what is at stake. The direct impact across Alaska, if this budget were to be enacted, will be stunning, and it's sad to think about those that can sit back and think that this is a good idea. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Sean. Next up.
Next is Roy Getchell.
Roy, are you with us?
Hello. Dear Chairman Fields and distinguished members of the State Board of Education, my name is Dr. Roy Getchell, and I'm the proud superintendent of the Haynesboro School District. I'm commenting today on your agenda item of approving the FY20 operating and capital budgets. I watched in earnest as the proposed FY20 budget was revealed yesterday and was incredibly disappointed to see that Alaska's K-12 students will bear the burden of many of the unprecedented budget reductions that have been proposed. As a former director of an international school in the United Arab Emirates for the Emirati Royal Family for 5 years, I acquired firsthand experience in learning the best practices of high-performing school systems around the world. I also learned that the American system, with all of its faults, is the gold standard that most nations aspire to become. Other countries are working at breakneck speed, including China, to emulate ours. They're working to hire our teachers, create the same competitive advantage that our students currently experience in Alaska for their own countries, and no high-performing system on our planet has achieved excellence through austerity, especially in the magnitude that this budget proposes. Here in Haines, our school has formally endorsed Alaska's Education Challenge, and it's working to meet the high academic and personal bar that you've all set for us. Since our governor's election in November, we've placed particular emphasis on career and technical education, purchasing technology upgrades, security upgrades, and improving the reading skills of our youngest students. We share common ground in providing world-class opportunities for all of our learners, all while enhancing the many things that make Alaska's students Alaskan. This Alaskan experience is a unique opportunity that must be protected at all costs. The proposed budget places all of those in extreme danger. I would invite any of you to visit our district in person. We're currently undergoing a community-wide strategic planning process for our school that I'm sure that you'd appreciate. Our students are truly the best of their generation. For their sake, I urge you to be their champion, support their future, and firmly reject the governor's proposed extreme cut for education. Thank you very much for the opportunity to express my views.
Okay, thank you, Roy. Next up.
Next up is David Brighton.
Okay, David.
Hello. Hello, my name is David Brighton. I'm the president of the Kenai Peninsula Education Association. I would like to begin by thanking you for this opportunity to speak in front of you. I would also like to raise a great amount of concern and opposition towards a budget cut of this magnitude. I think that we haven't had time to look at the impact and how that this cut will be rolled out. I know that my school district is currently still trying to adjust or trying to understand what impact this cut would have on the borough's ability to fund their schools, whether or not it's reducing the BSA or underfunding the BSA. I think that we need to wait a little bit, and I would encourage you to postpone approval of this budget. Ultimately, I hope that you will oppose this budget, but as I have thought over the last 24 hours or so, it's difficult for me to understand how exactly this will impact our schools because the magnitude of the cut. I try to think in concrete ways of you know how a school district would go about meeting this 25% cut. Would we try to graduate our high school students in ninth grade? You know, cutting three grades out of the system, that would be a 25% cut. Do we close one in four classrooms? That would be a 25% cut. Do we increase class size? You know, obviously it's more likely to increase class sizes, but will that be enough? Will we cut programs? Will my children be able to take foreign languages, sports, music? We all recognize the value of education and the importance that it plays in sustaining and growing our economy. And I would encourage you to give this process a chance for the public to fully vet this cut and analyze the effects in greater detail. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, David. Next up?
Next up is Randy Gillette.
Hey, this is Randy Gillette. I'm currently a teacher out in Kosciuszko, Alaska, which is in the Lower Kuskokwim School District, and I really appreciate the time that you are giving me to comment on this. I guess I've heard a lot about how this will affect the children and how it will affect, you know, the schools and everything, and yes, there is absolutely ways to cut the budget, you know, put more kids in a classroom, hire less teachers. But as a longtime 16-year teacher out in the bush, I can tell you a 25% cut will do so much more than that to the community, to the students, and just the well-being of life in the village. And I don't think that the villages can support that much loss in already, you know, degraded, run down school buildings, housing that's subpar,
And I just, I feel like that cut would be just detrimental to the life of a teacher, of the students, of everybody in the villages. And my second point is, we're already in a pattern where it is very hard to keep teachers, you know, since the new retirement system has, you know, it's been hard to keep teachers for any length of time. And if you put them in the difficult situations of living way out in Bush, Alaska, like we are, and up the number of people in the classes and, you know, stress them out even more with what's going to be, I'm sure, more requirements for education coming down the pipe, because there's always more requirements, but with less funding, you're going to take the stress level of teachers and drive it through the roof, and you will lose good educators, you will lose long-time educators, you will lose new educators to it. So that is my piece. Once again, I truly appreciate the time to talk, and have a great rest of your meeting. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Randy. Next up.
Patrick Mayer.
Okay, Patrick, you on?
Yes, I am. Thank you. Chair Fields and members of the State School Board, thank you for allowing me to provide testimony regarding the governor's budget. For the record, my name is Patrick Mayer, and I am the president of the Alaska Superintendents Association and the superintendent of the Yakutat School District. Before you today, you have the governor's budget, a budget that is nothing short of a disaster for the education of Alaska students. There are components of this budget that negatively impact every grade level, staff member, and family in Alaska. This recent budget development process has been shrouded in mystery with no real opportunity for input by Alaska's citizens. How can this be?
We just got an email.
For the sake of efficiency and respect for time, I will touch on only a few items. A cut of $280 million from the base student allocation, $20 million from supplemental, and cutting next year's forward funded $30 million will roll the funding back to 2005 levels and hit every district in a massive way. Early childhood, a cut of almost $8 million to early childhood education and a $3,200,000 cut to the pre-K grant apparently disregards the mountain of research that supports the importance of early childhood education. Broadband grants. A cut in the amount of $1,180,600 at a time we find ourselves using technology more and more. This is an equity issue where some districts provide access to digital content that is nearly unlimited, and other districts have major limitations to the ability to incorporate digital content, while at the same time, districts are in the process of incorporating more digital content because that's what the department wants us to do, right? Cutting broadband assistance hits rural districts hard. Major cuts to the state ferry system. That will drastically impact Southeast Alaska school districts' ability to participate in extracurricular activities. Roads are not always asphalt. The state ferry system is the road system in Southeast, and it allows students to be transported for extracurricular activities in a more efficient way. The impact of taking away municipalities' ability to tax oil and gas facilities is unprecedented. The loss of funding for Fairbanks, Valdez, Kenai, and the North Slope Borough would amount to a $421 million hit. That's going to impact local contribution to education. I've touched on only a few items in the extensive list of cuts reflected in the governor's budget. The overall package for education looks to be in the area of 25% as a reduction to education. This budget, put forward by Governor Dunleavy, will be devastating. Although the state school board's vote on the governor's budget and the subsequent result is symbolic, all Alaska will be watching the outcome of this vote to gain a better idea of the state school board's mindset. A 25% reduction to the education budget is unprecedented. I feel confident in saying that superintendents are unified in our opposition to this budget in its entirety. Interestingly, the Senate's own online survey suggests that 51% of the participants feel that education is underfunded, and 16% feel like it is funded about right. That means 67% of Alaskans believe that education is underfunded or funded appropriately. Thank you for your commitment to the students in our state and the representation of the communities where you live and work.
Okay, thank you, Patrick.
You bet.
Next up.
Next is Peter Heppner.
Okay, Peter.
Good afternoon, Chair Fields and board members of the State Board of Education. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to speak to you. I have been on the Cordova School Board. I'm in my 15th year. I'm also the immediate past president of the Alaska Association of School Boards. I highly recommend to not approve this fiscal year 2020 operating capital budget for the Department of Education and Early Development. The first reason that I would imagine that you have had not had sufficient time to fully digest the budget that was just presented yesterday. Can you tell what all the implications that these budget cuts will do to schools, districts, and ultimately to the education of the children of Alaska if you do not contact each district and ask the district the question, are other costs associated or indirectly related to this budget that affects your education, as well as the unintended consequences? I'm on the Cordova School District Board of Education. Each meeting we have our guiding principles on that first page of our agenda, just so that we keep in mind and focus on the goals. In Cordova, our school district utilizes our unique natural surroundings and active involvement of parents and community to provide a safe learning environment that offers challenging curricula and activities while developing successful, responsible students for the future. That is our mission statement. Additionally, the Alaska State Board of Education mission states an excellent education for every student every day. I always enjoy seeing that printed on the first page of our agenda, so it focuses us each and every school board meeting. Does this budget show a benefit for all Alaskan children sufficiently? I think not. Along with a 24% cut to K-12 funding by amount of $269 million. The unintended consequences to Cordova and many more districts in this budget are multifaceted and haven't been entirely ferreted out. Ferries, that's our student transportation, the cut by 67%. In Southeast Alaska and in Prince William Sound, our roads are painted blue. We have bumper stickers stating, I believe in ferries. We also, the school bond debt reimbursement, the elimination of the power cost equalization, PCE, then the broadband cut, the fund source change from public trust to the general fund, reversing a one-time funding for preschools, deleting funds to Head Start grants, cutting pre-K best beginning, parents as teachers programs. Repeal all funds, including the cost equalization fund, the higher education fund, and all other funds, and transfer that money to the general fund. So in Cordova, we do not have much in reserves left. We have had challenges with the city with funding. Due to the loss of funds due to the flat funding over the years, health care increases. This would cause an immediate loss of 10 of our 25 teachers. I am intimately involved in our budget over the development over the last 15 years. With the last 10 years of BSA funding increasing 8.7% and not keeping up with inflation, and with health insurance increases of 326% in that same time frame, we are losing dollars going to the classroom. And this is a $1 million cut to our state funding of $4.2 million. This would add that uncertainty to our teachers, and it is not fair. And just the nature of this cut, as it is an unknown, we've been developing our budget since October. And when will this budget eventually come out? Due to the way that this budget has come out 30 days into a 90-day legislative session. We do not want to lose trust in our state funding. At our most recent school board meeting, we approved the contract with teachers and classified contracts. We do not want to put our staff through this uncertainty. It is not right to do this to people. Think about the people involved in this decision. Additionally, I was a member of the Alaska Education Challenge, a member of the Safety and Mental Health Committee. I appreciate the position at DEED to coordinate this work on social emotional learning and trauma-informed practices, as well as the collaborative work between DEED and DBSA AASB on the 88-page trauma-engaged workbook that gives guidance to school districts. And this is the way to increase student achievement through relationship building, as students who have relationships with their teachers will absolutely dive through brick walls as they do not want to disappoint once those relationships are built. So please think about the actions that you are taking here. This will affect the students of Alaska. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you, Peter. We have quite a few left, so if the caller is coming up, you can try to keep it short and summarize if you can. That would be great. Who's the next caller?
Next caller is Tom Claymire.
Okay, Tom.
Hello, Chairman Fields and board members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Tom Claymire. I'm a longtime educator in Anchorage since 1996 in the Anchorage School District and currently serving as full-time release president of the Anchorage Education Association. I'm calling to echo the concerns that many people have had about the dramatic cuts in this budget, and I would urge you to postpone consideration. I don't need to discuss, but I guess I will anyways, the nature of public education as the cornerstone of society to provide safe, stable governments, sound democratic institutions, and a strong economy, not to mention the obligation as stated in the Alaska State Constitution to fund public education. Certainly budgets are a reality. The economy is real, and we need to face that, but we're not facing a spending problem, but a priority problem. Some people say more money does not equal results, but neither do unrealistic drastic cuts lead to improved student outcomes. So I'm asking you to postpone consideration of the budget in order to gather more information about the impact. Perhaps in its place, get a more reasonable, realistic budget proposal to gather public input and perhaps to allow the bipartisan efforts that began in the legislature last year to invest in our students rather than cut them off at the legs educationally to continue. And I ask that if, in absence of postponing, if you do vote today, that you vote against approval of the budget, because voting in favor is complicity. As members of the State Board of Education, I would ask that you prioritize your obligation to Alaska's students over political acquiescence. In the words of Edmund Burke, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men, and I would edit that to say good people, to do nothing. So I urge you to either postpone until we can have a more reasonable discussion, or if you do vote today, to vote no. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. Next up?
Rick Dormer.
Hey, Rick, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, Chair Fields, members of the State Board. Thanks for taking the time to hear us. My name is Rick Dormer. I'm in my 10th year as principal at Petersburg High School and Mitkoff Middle School here in Petersburg, and I serve as the Region 5 representative on the AASSP board. I'm in my fourth year there with that great group of leaders. I do want to take the time to echo the general concerns of the opposition, of course, shared by many regarding the governor's proposed fiscal year 20 operating capital budgets. We strongly oppose the drastic reduction of the BSA, of course, the negative impact on budgets. And we oppose continuing instability of education funding that's diminishing our ability to plan for the future in a responsible manner. In Petersburg, a 25% reduction equates to $1.8 million. It's a big hit for us. So I also want to show unique concerns just to schools down here in Southeast. The Alaska Marine Highway System, as brought up by other people, is already crippled with recent reductions, reduced sailings, cancellations. We're limping along already. And that's a big vehicle for us to send kids on activities as well as support our community. The governor's comments comparing the cost of the roads to the ferry system greatly concern us here in Petersburg and in Southeast. In our school district, we would eliminate middle school activities completely. We drastically reduce high school, not to mention how that negatively impacts our community here. Families will certainly leave. This reduced and slashed school funding will badly hurt rural communities in different ways than it may negatively affect urban areas. We're very proud in these small island communities to be central establishments of our respective boroughs, and we support the community members in so many ways, even outside education, and we're proud of that. Most of the Southeast schools down here are performing at a high academic level despite repetitive cuts to education, and that levy will break eventually, most imminently with loss of great electives, our arts, our music, our career technical education, advanced placement courses. These are classes that make strong schools exceptional, and they engage students daily. The loss of teaching jobs also means families will leave as they cannot secure equitable employment on our islands and our isolated communities. Petersburg, just as an example, where we live here, is a leader in the state in our PEAKS assessment scores and other national academic indicators. Personally, not just as a principal, but as a father, I have two kids in our school systems. We have stayed in Petersburg for many, many years because of an excellent school system and a strong community. And I know this is a similar story to communities around us, such as Wrangell, Ketchikan, Craig, Sitka, et cetera. I urge you to please fight for all schools in Alaska, while also understanding the unique challenges facing our Southeast schools, our communities, and certainly our children, recognizing that we are equally as important as schools on the road system. Thank you so much, Board, for serving and representing all of us. Your courage, your wisdom, and your strength during these difficult times will certainly determine a future for Alaska's children. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Rick. Next up.
Lisa Parody.
Okay, Lisa, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. For the record, my name is Lisa Skiles-Parody. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators, representing superintendents, secondary and elementary principals, school business officials, and the host of school administrators, all serving students across Alaska. Thank you for the time to share a couple thoughts. Yesterday, as you know, Governor Dunleavy released his FY 2020 budget containing an approximately $1.7 billion reduction in overall funds. And we are very concerned about the proposals to substantially cut core services, including this 25% reduction in school district funding. I think we agree that this budget fails on all accounts for just looking at costs and not at the value. What we know in Alaska is that Alaskans care deeply about education, and they are willing to pay for it. As my members are doing, taking a pause, understanding the impacts of the direct cuts and the indirect cuts, what those impacts will be to each district and then cumulatively is, I think, important for all of us to do. Unless you were involved in the development of this budget, then I would surmise that we each need a little more time to understand what those true impacts look like. And I want to express appreciation to my members who are busily, actively working to do that right now. Another layer of stress has been placed on their loads. You know, make no mistake about this. These proposals are devastating to public education across Alaska. $330 million, or the approximate 25%, is tied directly to students, directly to teachers, directly to classrooms in every village, every community, the cities, the boroughs of our state. And as you heard, and thanks to our LASBO legislative team, the proposed cuts to the BSA do take us back to funding levels of 2005-2006. Nothing costs the same as it did in 2005. Obviously, there will be specific cuts. A couple of examples, as you are aware and have talked about, 40% of Alaska public school students are low income. And when you remove and I also think we have to be looking at early learning. When you remove all of pre-K, Alaska leads the country in child maltreatment, abuse, and neglect, which means our kids have higher ACEs scores. You, as the State Board of Education, know this. early engagement helps offset and overcome those. To focus on reading by third grade while removing a proven practice to help students get there makes no sense. Voters in our larger communities relied on the promise that was made when voting on bonds to support the construction and maintenance of their schools. To remove what was promised and what voters relied on is backing out of a contractual obligation. Removal of online supports with the broadband assistance grants, homework help, OWL. I mean, all of these digital learning and technology supports removes resources that our rural schools need to offset the challenges of distance opportunities. This is plain and simple an equity issue. And we should be incrementally moving our district forward by additional support to them to get where we all want them to go with digital learning and extending the good reach of teachers to our villages. This is just heading the wrong direction. The Dunleavy budget is a non-starter. It was developed by OMB with really no relation to operational reality in public education. It had no input from school districts. I just really encourage you to take time to think about what the impact will be across Alaska. We all have faith in our systems of checks and balances, and you are a part of that. We have faith in our legislators that they won't stand still for seeing their local schools decimated as what has been proposed and as what is before you. Superintendents and principals, school business officials are working with their communities to evaluate the impact on students, to determine how to move forward while addressing these devastating cuts to core services in human health, social services, and education, and what those impacts will look like in the schools. We have to factor all of this into being able to provide Alaska's children with the education and services they deserve and need. From our perspective, the priority appears to be the PFD over children and over caring for the health of Alaskans. We feel that that priority is misplaced, and your duty as state board members to do first and foremost support the learning of our students. We think if you take time to really analyze this, you will see that is true. And I just appreciate the time and the service that you are committing to this process. We will be working on this now through the rest of the session, and I hope that we can all continue to work towards what is best for our students and best for student learning, being thoughtful in the process. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Okay, next up.
Charlene Amison.
Go ahead, Charlene. If you can try to keep it brief, that'd be good. We're getting caught up on time here. Charlene, are you with us?
Charlene Armistice.
Let's move on to the next person.
Laurel Jackson.
Laurel, are you on?
Okay. Can you share anything about what exactly led up to the finding?
Let's go to the next one.
Mike Hanley.
Mike, are you with us?
I am. Thank you, Chair Fields and State Board of Education. I am currently the superintendent of Chugach School District as well as the vice chair of the Alaska Children's Trust and the previous commissioner of education. So I do understand the position that the tenuous position that both the commissioner and the Board of Education is in, recognizing also that the approval or the acceptance of this budget is largely symbolic, but I think that also gives you the freedom to approve or, oppose this budget. especially a budget that didn't have the input of the commissioner. I'm not going to reiterate so many of the things that that have been said today. We do lead the country in child abuse and neglect. We do have a moral responsibility to meet the needs of our children and to do that as soon as possible. Pre-K is one of the powerful ways that we do it. Many districts have taken on grants and other things to make sure that that's incorporated. The state has invested some. To remove that is to really remove an opportunity to help our kids overcome some of those challenges. Our district is a competency-based district. We have erased so many organizational barriers. All of our kids move at their own pace. Every one of them has an individualized learning plan. We leverage state funds with a lot of grant funding for our variable-term residential school. I honestly am not sure what more I'm being asked to do. I was at a conference today, a teleconference today with the Copper River School District doing very similar things. We partner with them for efficiencies and for effectiveness and opportunities for our kids. I would just urge each of the board members to think about your own district and ask the question, you know, how many schools will close with a budget like this? How many teachers will be laid off? How many programs will be cut? And how is that possibly good for kids? I mean, there are amazing things happening in Chair Fields. Your district is one of those. I would just urge you to look at your own district. I just don't know how in good conscience you can go and visit your schools and say, this budget is what we need to do to change the trajectory. This isn't a fine-tuned cut. This isn't a directed cut. This is a massive removal of opportunity for our kids in the state. Thank you, and thank you. I appreciate the challenge that you are all facing.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Anybody else on?
Our final public comment is Karen Salisbury.
Okay, Karen, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to weigh in on this item. So my name is Karen Salisbury, and I am the president of the Classified Employees Association in the Mat-Su Borough School District. I'm not only calling in today concerned of the possibilities for the 900 support staff that I represent, but more importantly, for my nieces, nephews, and grandsons who are attending public schools here in the Valley. Last night, my oldest grandson and I were looking at some Facebook feeds that had the governor's proposed budget cuts. So he's a freshman this year, and he's taken civics, so he has a new interest in what education funding means to him and his friends. When we got to the line detailing cuts to K-12 education, he asked what that meant. And I explained that instead of having 38 students in his civics class, he would have many more. So after his initial shock, he said, there's no way that we can do that. Now, mind you, my grandson can't fathom doing the dishes without being asked, but he knew exactly what having more kids in the class would mean. It would mean he would have an even harder time concentrating. He would have no time to ask his question, and he would have less learning. I know that you share his concerns and that you'll do everything you possibly can to help him. Passing the budget today without everyone truly understanding the details and how those cuts will impact the classroom seems rushed. I encourage you to step back a little bit. Wait on this budget decision until you can digest the information and let people weigh in. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
Okay, thank you, Karen. And that should be the end of our public comment of those that are online. And thank you for calling in and giving testimony. Also, I know I personally have gotten quite a few emails, so thank you for those emails as well. And so moving on, we're at our agenda item, approve FY 2020 operating and capital budget. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, this is Member Scott.
Okay, go ahead.
I move the State Board of Education and Early Development approve the Governor's Fiscal Year 2020 Operating and Capital Budget for the Department of Education and Early Development.
Do I have a second?
Kay, we have to have a second or we can't hear from Ms. Teschner on any of the details or her report. So I'm just asking for a second.
Member Hamilton, I'll second.
Okay, thank you. And, you know, I just so board members know, we'll hear from Ms. Teschner about the details of the budget, and then I'm planning on putting a motion forward of tabling the question. So anyway, just to have that in mind, and we'll move forward with the proposal of the capital operating budget. Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair Fields. The board is being asked to approve the department's FY 2020 operating and capital budgets. And thank you for the motion and second. Director Teschner is now going to walk the board through that budget.
Good afternoon, everybody. For the record, this is Heidi Teschner, your Director of Finance and Support Services. And I'm just going to go right into the packet behind the agenda item. So moving on to, and I apologize, there's no pages, but the page with the graphs on it, just to give you guys a high-level overview. Between our agency and program operations and our K-12 funding program, overall the budget before you is just over $1.3 billion. And then the positions that we have, 266 full-time, 14 part-time, and 2 non-perm. The graphs on this page show you the breakdown between all of our fund sources overall and then broken down for just our agency operations. But I'll move into the next page, and it gives you the detail by each component for what's in our K-12 formula programs and what's in our agency and program operations. And that's broken down by the fund sources. And for new members and to remind old members, the DGF column, that's our designated general funds. The UGF is our unrestricted general funds and our federal funding. And then our other funding, which includes things like statutory designated program receipts, interagency receipts, and the public school trust fund. So this gives you, but we're going to get into the details. So right now I'm just going to do some outline of it. The next page breaks out our, again, our K-12 formula versus our agency and program operations. For this is just our general funds only, so our designated and unrestricted general funds, and compares the FY 2020 governor amended budget to our FY 19 management plan, so the current year budget. Overall, in the formula, the K-12 formula programs, it's a 29.1% reduction, which overall is still 29.1% reduction overall in our general funds. And we'll get into the details of what the differences are in a couple pages. The next page is our, still comparing our FY 20 governor amended budget to the FY 19 management plan. This is for all funds, so this includes our federal and our other funding sources as well. And so overall, with all funding sources, it's a 24.2% reduction. The next two pages I will go over in detail. This provides the board the detail of the ins and outs that gets us to that 24.2% reduction. And so just walking down by the lines, line one is our department-wide. There's a 50% travel reduction across the state. This compares, so overall it's a $353,000 decrease. This is comparing based on our FY19 actual travel across the department. The line two is a technical adjustment removing our FY 2019 school debt reimbursement. The next few lines are technical adjustments, but line four is what is the reduced portion of the foundation program. It's a 269 and a little bit more reduction overall to that formula. It's just a straight up formula reduction. There's no cut to the BSA, which is currently still in statute at $5,930. Line 6 and 7 are technical lines, basically, for the end, the reversal of the prior year people trans and the current year people trans amount. The same with lines 8, 9, and 10, still technical changes. Lines, basically, 8 and 9 are zeroed out because the additional $30 million for FY20 one-time money outside of the formula is removed from the FY20. Budget. Line 11 is donations from dividend raffle. It's projected to be $300,000. This is through the dividend. Anybody who wants to put money towards education, 25% of that goes to the raffle, 25% goes to the education endowment fund, and 50% of it goes to grants to school districts, which this is what is projected to be received from that. Line 12 is our special schools. It's a reduction of $17,300 to the Special Education Services Agency. This is just based on their statutory formula, so a decrease related to that. Line 13 is in our executive administration, reverses our Every Student Succeeds Act carry forward money, which was multi-year money that the department had received. That ends at the end of FY19. Line 14 in administrative services is just a salary adjustment of an additional $24,000 to based on adjusting salaries from our Office of Information Technology. And line 15 transfers the administrative services director's position, so my position, to the Office of Management Budget per Administrative Order 302. So line 16 is removing the fiscal note, a one-time item from the school finance and facilities from the HB 212 that was put into place last session. Line 17 is an increase to our technical and vocational education funding formula that goes to the Galena Interior Learning Academy based on statutory formula. Line 18 is an increment request of $320,000 for a K through third grade literacy project. Line 19 is $50,000 for the Alaska Autism Resource Center, which basically those lines are basically in and out, and it's basically a technical item in the budget. So a lot of the line 21 through 24 are just reversing one-time items from the previous fiscal year. Line 25 removes the early learning childhood grants of $1.2 million that the legislature added in for additional grants to more preschools. Line 26 removes the Head Start grant funding of $6,853,000. Line 27 removes the Parents as Teachers grant of $474,700. And line 28 reduces the Best Beginnings grants of $320,000. And line 29 removes the pre-K grants of $2 million. And then line 30 is reversing the one-time item from FY19. This was two-year money for 19 and 20 of the $6 million. So it's just removing as a technical adjustment. Line 31 removes all of the funding for the Alaska State Council on the Arts and all of their positions. There's legislation that has to pass for this to be removed. So that's separate legislation that has to pass as well. Line 32 is the Mount Edgecombe High School. We're doing a fund source switch, moving their funding back to the unrestricted general funds from the public school trust fund. Line 33 reverses our one-time appropriation of $400,000 for the Aquatic Center, but there's also language in the budget that would extend that appropriation, so that's a technical item, but extending that the usage of those funds into fiscal year 20. Line 34 is the Mount Edgecombe High School Facilities Maintenance, and this is removing the general fund program receipt authorization for the Mount Edgecombe High School Aquatic Center. And the reason for this one is there's intent that the Aquatic Center be sold or transferred. Line 35 is a reduction to the school broadband access grant. This is funding that is not expected to be utilized in fiscal year 20 based on the applications that the department expects to receive. So we still are estimating that 100% of those that apply will still receive their funding. On the next page is line 36, and this is just a fund source switch for the school bag access grant from the Higher Education Investment Fund to the general fund. Line 37 removes the funding in the position for the Online with Libraries program. And 38 and 39 address the Live Homework Help program, eliminating the program but doing a fund source switch in case that elimination does not occur. Line 40 is the Alaska Post-Secondary Education, and this is a fund source switch for their Alaska Education Grant from the Higher Education Fund to the General Fund. And then the line 41 is the WAMI Medical Education Program, and this is removing funding for that program. There is, again, separate legislation that has to pass for this to occur. And then line 42 is the Alaska Performance Scholarship Awards, and this is just a fund source switch, again, from the Alaska Higher Education Investment Fund to the General Fund. The idea, the intent behind this is that the Alaska Education, the Higher Education Investment Fund will be zeroed out, and everything that was funded from there will be all funded from general funds. Not noted on here, but of interest is that for Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, there is also pending legislation that would eliminate the corporation and the commission. And that's basically that one. And the next few slides are just for your informational purposes, a breakdown of the programs and the funding associated with that for our student learning and educator and school excellence sections. I won't go into detail on that one. On the next slide is our FY20 projected state program allocations. This shows our formula program, and the third column over, the projected reduced foundation, this is the projected amount that districts would receive with the $269 million-plus reduction. This is what, based on their FY20 projected ADM. And then the last page is just our capital budget. We have one item of deferred maintenance for the major maintenance grant fund list, and that funds our first project, Fairbanks, the Barnett Magnet School Renovation Phase 3 project. And that is all I have to present, but I am happy to take any questions from any board member.
Okay, we'll just open it up for board members' discussion, questions.
Chair Fields, this is Member Van Diest, and I need Heidi to help me understand the school debt reimbursement.
Yes, through the chair, Member Van Diest. The and I think I neglected to mention this. The school debt reimbursement program. There is legislation to repeal that program in FY20 and moving forward. So, if the legislation were to pass. There's a zero in the budget before you, but pending legislation has to pass for that to happen. Does that answer your question?
Not really, Heidi. I don't really even know what it is.
Okay.
I mean, I know what those words mean, but if you could just give an elementary definition of that, it would be very helpful.
Will do, through the chair, Member Van Diest. The school debt reimbursement program allows, currently in statute, allows municipalities with bonding authority to sell bonds for school and other related projects. They can apply to the department for a debt reimbursement project, and we will refund that if it's eligible. We will refund that project based on the percentages set out in statute. Currently, that program is in a five-year moratorium that ends on July 1 of 2020. So it's basically reimbursing districts for their local bond sales on school eligible projects.
Thank you. So, Chair Fields, I'd like to follow up with a couple more questions. Which school districts would be impacted by this?
Through the chair, Member Van Deest, I don't have that full list in front of me, but it is particularly municipalities. Anchorage is on there, Fairbanks, Kenai, Kodiak, Ketchikan, Matsu, Valdez, North Slope, Northwest Arctic, and I know I'm missing a few, but there's about 20 or so districts. Juneau's on there. And I'm happy
Thank
to follow
you.
Up the board if you guys would like a breakdown of what, and I know in your board packet from last week, there is a breakdown of what, of those districts and how much they were projected to get in 20.
Okay, Heidi, I can just look at that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Chair Fields,
go ahead, Sandy.
I have another question on the school debt reimbursement. Heidi, when you talk about a five-year moratorium, what is it specifically a moratorium on? New bond debt or a moratorium on those payments for the past 5 years?
Through the chair, Member Kowalski, that is on new debt. So we're still paying on any previously approved bond sales and bond projects. It's for anything that's new. So if Anchorage hypothetically decided to sell bonds within this five-year period, they could not come back to the department and ask for reimbursement.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
This is Member Hamilton.
Go ahead.
Heidi, thanks for the helpful explanations. Regarding ACPE and their being zeroed out of the budget, obviously there are loans outstanding. There's an enormous amount of cost to start moving things around. It's an enormous corporation, millions of dollars in play here. If this was to be defunded, what does that mean for all the students who are currently have loans, as well as those who are receiving the Alaska Performance Scholarship? Have you had any discussion with ACP regarding that?
Through the chair, Member Hamilton, this for starters, the Alaska Performance Scholarship awards are not going away. That program is still expected to continue. I have had brief conversations with the post-secondary education. I don't have all of the answers right now. I know that we would have to work through the details of what that looks like. The students who currently have loans through them would still be obligated to pay them, whether it's a phased-in process or what. We would have to work out the details that make it a clear process so that it's clean and everybody knows moving forward. I know that's not an exact answer, but that's what I know at this time.
Any other discussion?
Chair Fields, this is Member Van Deest again with another question on the pre-kindergarten grants and early learning coordination and all the things that have to do with the pre-K stuff and early learning. I'm just curious to know how this is going to affect school districts and kind of what the department sees happening with all of those funding sources being removed.
Through the chair, Member Van Deest, I know that there are a lot of good programs that are occurring in the state. I can't really speak to exactly what this is going to look like. I know there's 26 districts that currently use or have a pre-K program. These programs that are listed, for instance, Parents as Teachers Best Beginnings, they're not statutory programs. And so And then the Head Start grant is used to pay a match for federal Head Start agencies. So it's hard to say exactly what the full impact is going to be and what it will look like if this was not with this funding gone.
This is Deputy Commissioner Karen Moline. A little bit more possibly to your answer, Member Van Deest, is the Parents as Teachers and Best Beginnings would not affect school districts directly. Those programs are outside of the school district, and those funds are not a part of a school district's budget. The early learning grants are distributed to districts for their pre-elementary programs. So that would impact some of those districts. The department was just awarded a grant from the federal government, an early learning grant. So there is grant money in the pipeline to distribute to districts, if that's helpful for you.
Thank you, Karen. That is helpful. Chair Fields, may I ask another question?
Yep.
So this question is on the Alaska State Council on the Arts, and if this is cut, and I don't know which programs or services are being cut by that.
So through the chair, Member Van Deest, this would eliminate everything, essentially everything that the Arts Council does. If Arts Council wanted to no longer, if they were no longer considered a corporation of the state, they could and wanted to continue the services that they do provide, they would be able, I mean, there's an opportunity that they could, through their partnerships, continue all of those services. They would just no longer be funded through the state and be no longer considered a state entity.
Okay. I might be asking a silly question, but what exactly do they do?
Through the chair, they provide art grants to school districts and other arts organizations across the state. They manage the Arts in Public Places Fund. They work with the Department of Transportation on their every new pieces of facility construction requires a 1% of that construction cost be included in the facility. So they work with the Department of Transportation through that. They have their license plate program. And they do a lot of collaboration with the Rasmussen Foundation and the Margaret A. Cargill Foundation and just all of the arts organizations throughout Alaska.
Thank you, Heidi. So my understanding is that they're being the proposal is to cut this particular entity, but they could have an opportunity to seek funding elsewhere.
That is correct, through the chair. And I'll also add that there is pending legislation on here. I have not seen that final pending legislation, so I don't know exactly what that all entails and if any of their duties would be reassigned to other state agencies.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Chair Fields?
Yeah.
This is Tanis, and I was wondering about the line on Mount Edgecombe High School. It says that it's going to be a fund source change from the public school trust fund to the general fund, and I was just wondering how is this source change, how is that going to affect Mount Edgecombe?
Through the chair, Tanis, that's not going to have any direct effect on Mount Edgecombe. What we're doing is a couple years ago, the legislature switched the funding from general funds to the public school trust fund. Previously, the public school trust fund was 100% applied towards the foundation program. So they had made this change to save general funds a few years ago. A lot of things that occur through Mount Edgecombe, if there's like a salary adjustment, there's confusion and technical adjustments that have to happen throughout the budget. So to make it very clean and easier for everybody to manage the trust fund, we've asked that if they just go back to being 100% generally funded for, and this is for their residential component side, they'll still get all of their other funding as well.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Any other questions or comments?
Chair Fields, this is Member Van Deest again, and I actually have a couple more questions. One has to do with online with libraries. What is that, Heidi?
So the online, through the chair, the online with libraries program, it was a program that started under a federal broadband technology opportunity program grant that we had, was it the American Reimbursement or Recovery Act, whatever it was called, the ERA money. So we received that, and this is just, it provides support for broadband or internet services within libraries across the state to have that, to be available within libraries so that anybody who needed access to it could go to their local library if they participate and be able to communicate.
Has the department looked at what communities would be most affected by that, and if they have, which ones would they be?
Through the chair, we do have a list of what those communities are. Unfortunately, I do not have that in front of me, but would be happy to provide that to the committee, or the, not committee, the board, so yet you know what those communities are.
Thank you. Yes, that would be good. Chair Fields, I have another question on homework help. So live homework help, my understanding is that this is for students to be able to send an email or get help from teachers on various subjects. Am I understanding this correctly, Heidi?
Yes. It allows students to call in and get tutoring assistance through a number of subjects that they wouldn't maybe have available to them, so they can call after hours, after school, and get this assistance that they need.
So then my follow-up question would be, how many students use the service? Like, I know you probably wouldn't have the numbers for FY19, but what about like FY18?
Again, through the chair, we have that information. I do not, unfortunately, have that at my fingertips right in front of me, but we can follow up with the committee, the board.
Okay. And then my last question, Chair Fields, would be, again, the number of students that participated in the WAMI medical education. You know, how many are we looking at there?
Through the chair, don't have that in front of us either, and but I do know for that program there is set number of beds, and I'm sorry I'm not remembering off the top of my head what that number is. I think it's 25. We can definitely follow up with the board on the number of students impacted by that program.
Thank you, Heidi.
Thank you.
Chair Fields, this is Sally Stockhausen. You have a, may I?
Yeah, go ahead.
And I'm sorry, Heidi, if you already explained this, but can you tell me again what that WAMI medical education line item was?
Yes, through the chair. So the WAMI Medical Education Program is an agreement that it's like Washington, Wyoming, Alaska, Montana, and Idaho. It's an agreement with all of us that we in Alaska have a set number of seats through the University of Washington for their medical program. And through that, the WAMI program, they district, and we don't run the program here at the department. It's run through the Commission on Postsecondary Education. But what I know of it is that students can get their medical education through the University of Washington, and then they can come back to Alaska. And if they're practicing physicians here, their loans can be prorated or forgiven to a certain amount. But basically, it helps to try to attract physicians and doctors back to Alaska.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, any other board comments? Okay. I know Member Scott got kicked off, so I don't know. Hopefully she can get back on here pretty quick. And Commissioner, should I read Member Griffin's comments since he's flying right now and couldn't be present?
Sure, you can do that now or
a little later.
Or after your motion, whichever one you want to do.
Okay. I feel as though the board supports the governor's efforts to balance the budget. And obviously there's a lot of red, as somebody brought up in public comment. And there's a lot to digest for the board and for the legislature and for Alaskans. But I'm gonna propose a motion here. Just that I think we should wait and watch the rest of this budget process work through the legislature, so as to not become a political pawn in the process, budget process. So I move to postpone the question on the table.
Second.
Okay, seconded by Member Van Deest. And with that, we'll go ahead and have discussion on the motion to postpone.
This is Member Hamilton.
Yeah.
I concur with the motion to postpone. I seconded earlier to get the Teschner's report out on the table to help us understand some of the questions that we had. I do know that going forward, this is just one step in a long process. Legislature now has the budget, and they'll be going through it, and a lot of changes will be made. And so it's wise for us to hold off making any kind of a vote. But it would be helpful, Chairman Fields or Commissioner Johnson, if you'd remind everybody listening online, as well as the board, when there is a vote at some point in the future, should this amendment pass, what it actually entails, what it means, what is arbitrary, what's binding, what's not binding. I think a lot of our people who have emailed, called, are understanding that we make the decision, yes or no, to accept the budget that the governor has put forward, but that's not, I believe, the whole story. So if someone could explain that to us all to understand what any vote would significantly mean in the future.
Chair Fields, this is Commissioner Johnson, and we have the board's attorney here from the Department of Law, Assistant Attorney General Luann Wyrock. So I'm going to let her speak to that statute that Member Hamilton, Vice Chair Hamilton, is referencing.
Right. As you may be aware, that AS 1407-150 is the statute that gives you a responsibility it says that the commissioner has a responsibility and authority for preparation and execution of a budget for the department subject to the approval of the board. But I did a little bit of research on this, and it was actually, it went into place in 1966. It was only amended once in 1967. It hasn't been amended since then. But in 1970, the Executive Budget Act was passed, and the Executive Budget Act sets up an entire process for agencies to submit their budgets to the OMB, for the governor to develop a budget, and for then the legislature to have their say in what the ultimate budget will be. So to me, the statutory language is not, it really doesn't fit very well with the Executive Budget Act. I think it has to be reconciled somehow with the Executive Budget Act. But you, I don't think you as a board have more responsibility than what the Executive Budget Act gives you. So anyway, it's, the language is somewhat of an anachronism, but at any rate, there's no limitation on when you may approve the budget. And there's really, it's unclear what budget you have a responsibility to approve. So you have a lot of leeway in deciding what budget you want to approve and when you want to approve it.
This is Member Kowalski. I have a clarifying question.
Yeah, go ahead.
So when you say that the board, can you describe what the State Board of Education's responsibility is as it's outlined in the Executive Budget Act?
Well, I can tell you that the Executive Budget Act, the provision that applies to all state agencies, just requires that the agencies must include in the budget requested, they have to basically make a budget request, and that is submitted to OMB. And that is, under the Executive Budget Act, the responsibility of the agency when it comes to the budget. Really, after that, it becomes the responsibility of OMB and the governor's office to develop the budget. So in this sense, that's why the statute that is still on the books, 1407-150, isn't really consistent with that. But at the same time, it is on the books, and we would, and if it were interpreted by a court, they would try to make some sense of it. So you do have some place in this process where that statute gives you responsibility, you know, to approve the budget, but it's totally unclear when that responsibility would kick in. So anyway, I think if I can say one thing, maybe that would give you a little more guidance, so that from here it there will be a long process between the governor and the legislature to determine the ultimate budget, and you could as a board just make a decision in the midst of that process to weigh in on approval of a budget that may, an amended budget that may exist sometime in the future. But you don't have to make that decision now. Under the motion to postpone, it's that your motion to approve is postponed indefinitely. And then you have the choice to bring it up when you think it's appropriate.
Thank you.
Okay, any other board members have discussion?
This is Member Scott.
Okay, go ahead.
Thanks. Thank you. I appreciated having this meeting today, one day following the release of the budget. I'm glad to be one of the first to hear Alaskans weigh in on the governor's proposal. That said, I know we appreciate the governor's efforts to balance the budget, but I welcome the motion to postpone. I want to be clear that I'm not rejecting the governor's proposed budget at this time, but I'm in agreement that a more deliberative process should take place before coming to a vote of this board, whether that vote is symbolic or not. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. I'll go ahead and read Member Griffin's response. This was sent to me this morning. And it says, bottom line, we must live within our means. I support the budget proposal before us because it establishes a framework for us to discuss and organize our priorities going forward within the reality of our current revenues. Many, many good programs that are passionately supported did not make it into this budget proposal. It's not because they're not good and valuable programs. It's because we can no longer afford all the programs we once enjoyed when we had more revenue. Having nearly expended all of our savings, we are in the very difficult position of making gut-wrenching choices between sustaining good programs or sustaining vital ones. Ultimately, I have enormous faith in the very bright people at all levels of our statewide K-12 education system to leverage the state budget crisis into the creative and innovative solutions that will be necessary to deliver the quality education our kids need and deserve. So that was from Member Griffin. So any other discussion?
This is Member Kowalski. I have another question. It's a nuanced question, or maybe not. But just based on the testimony that we're hearing today and the comments that are being shared with us about positions on the governor's budget, I'm searching for clarification from on whether we, when we do have this vote, symbolic or otherwise, are we voting on the governor's budget or the commissioner's budget as proposed? And if it's following the Executive Budget Act, and I know that you said that we can vote at any time on, you know, right now it looks like we can choose our time of voting and which version, which budget we vote on. I'm just wanting to know, though, what is the legal opinion on what we're exactly voting on?
And I would, obviously that's directed to Luann, but that's a good question. But I would ask that you'd give Luann some time just to make sure that, you know, we get the question answered as best we can.
Sure.
Is that all right, Member Kowalski?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. You know, okay. Chair Fields, this is Luann Wyrock, and I think if there are any nuances to this question, you know, we could follow up later. But I think it's fair to say that right now this is the governor's proposed budget.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Chair Fields, this is Sally Stockhausen.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Is this the appropriate time to make a comment about it, or should we stick to the topic of your motion right now?
If it's relevant to the motion and postponing and tabling the question, go ahead.
Okay, I'll wait till after you're done then. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Hearing no more discussion, we have roll call to postpone the question or postpone the question.
Member Griffin has been excused. First Vice Chair Hamilton.
Yes.
Member Kowalski.
Yes.
Member Scott.
Yes.
Member Stockhausen.
Yes.
Second Vice Chair Van Diest.
Yes.
Colonel Van Meter.
Yes.
Member Loring.
Yes.
Member Maynard. Chair Fields.
Yes. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote? Hearing no changes?
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Okay, thank you. And now moving on to board comments. We'll just go ahead and go through. You don't have to have any, but if you do, that's fine. We'll just start with Member Hamilton.
Yeah, no comments. I'm in transit. There's a lot of background noise, but I look forward to seeing our commissioner step forward and work hard with the legislature to help every way possible, to help every student succeed every day, as well as the governor.
Okay, thank you. Member Kowalski?
Yep, thank you. I concur with Member Hamilton in encouraging our commissioner to work with the governor and legislature and school districts on determining what's best for our students in Alaska. And I appreciate the governor and the legislator's responsibility of delivering a balanced and fair budget, and I know that they've got a lot of work ahead of them. I'm interested in learning how our role will play out in this process as well. That's it.
Okay, thank you. Member Scott.
I have no additional comments. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Member Stockhausen.
I do have a comment. Like most classroom teachers, I'm greatly concerned about the implications of these budget cuts for education, like many of those people we heard today.
But that said, I'm more worried about the well-being of our state for future generations if we don't stop the pattern of spending more than we have and further gathering our reserves. So I do support the governor's effort to balance this budget, and I, too, concur and encourage the commissioner to work with the governor to make this happen. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Member Van Deest.
Yes, I want to be on record that I do support Governor Dunleavy and his courage to tackle our fiscal problems head on, because we can't keep spending what we don't have. Our expenditures must equal our revenues. All of us know this firsthand as we manage our own family finances on a daily basis. We are in a severe fiscal crisis in Alaska. We have spent down much of our reserves and savings. All of us need to make hard choices as this financial crisis affects all Alaskans. Our legislators need to do their job by unpacking the governor's proposed budget, making tough choices, and working toward a sustainable fiscal plan. I want to charge Commissioner Johnson to work with the legislators and school districts in our state to come up with a fiscal plan that meets the needs of our pre-K through 12th grade students. We need him and his leadership team to fight for our young people by ensuring the education budget provides the funds for relevant learning opportunities, increased student success, and safe schools. As Commissioner Johnson has continued to say, how will we meet the educational challenges in Alaska? We all now have this opportunity to demonstrate our commitment to that call.
Okay, thank you, Member Van Deest. Colonel Van Meter.
Yeah, thank you. Definitely tough times. I look forward to hearing back from the commissioner and the deed as far as getting a better understanding of really what the implications were going to be. Very cognizant of what the governor is trying to do, and I think it's right. I would say, you know, there are, you know, there's two ways to balance the budget, you know, increasing revenues and trying to, you know, cut programs. And so I just encourage the commissioner to work back through the legislature to at all avenues try to achieve the balanced budget while still trying to meet the needs of our kids out there and our teachers. That's all. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Member Loring?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you so much to the department and to the board for just working so cohesively together. And through tough times, budget cuts are always tough. And but I know that our team here is going to be the ones that can partner with school districts and help alleviate some of the damage that's going to occur. I want to say that I do support Governor Dunleavy after hearing him out on a number of occasions. I do understand where he's coming from, and I definitely agree that we can't spend money we don't have. I think that he's taking a bold step, and I think that it's a step that, if done right, it will definitely be in the it'll definitely be for the better of our state. So I look forward to working with everyone and kind of brainstorming ways we can help come up with new ways to do education. And I'm so excited. I'm so excited to see what this next year has in store for us. So thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Member Loring, and well said. And you guys have pretty much said it all, and so I'm not going to say anything more, but thank you. Thank you for being on. Thank you for all the public comment again. And with that being said, we will adjourn at 5:27. Everybody have a good night.
Your host is exiting the conference.